never wanted to be in a fancy metropolitan broadcast facility where the most thought-provoking thing within view is an occasional four-car pileup on the freeway below. We like being miles from nowhere, in the middle of a vineyard that cannot be seen from the little two-lane road on the other side of that rise. Our barn has awesome acoustics and was built with hand tools over 100 years ago. Nonetheless, we've got some really state-of-the-art broadcast technology inside. And our wine cellar, once a root cellar that is absolutely packed with wine we've collected or been given by friends. Welcome. You have just set foot on Grape Encounters radio property, where we don't believe in no trespassing signs. But let's make this our little secret. Oh, and that wine is protected by the sweetest-looking golden retriever who dated a Doberman for a while, so don't get any ideas.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow.
And it is time for your weekly Grape Encounter, and what a Grape Encounter it is, because there has been something absent from Grape Encounters for the past few weeks. That is the inimitable Sarah Schneider, the wine editor from Sunset Magazine, who had an awful lot of things to do as we got into the new year and was doing a lot of traveling, but we have her back, albeit by phone today. Hey, welcome, Sarah.
David, it's really good to be back, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Where have you been?
I have been east and south and north, and I'm really happy to be back in the Bay Area, home base for me.
Hey, you were doing some television work.
I did a little bit of that. I can't say it's my very, very favorite thing to do. I'd much rather be talking on radio, but I did a few TV segments.
And what did you talk about?
It was fun. I was talking about affordable wines for the holidays and food pairings for all the best holiday events. It was great.
And so it actually tips very well into our segment today, because we're talking about not just affordable wines today, but we're talking about, and I use this term kind of loosely, everyday wines, because we tend to talk a lot on this show about boutique wines and some of the more prestigious kinds of wines, and not on purpose, but we do ignore the bulk of the wine that America is drinking. That's wine that is usually under $20 for sure, and under $10 in most cases. And I thought today it was time to give those wines a little love.
I love that idea, because there are all sorts of reasons in January to talk about affordable wines when you're recovering from the holidays kind of excesses. But it's a topic that's been close to my heart for a long time. I think people imagine that I drink $80 a bottle wine most nights, or most days, since I do that too. But that's just not true. Nobody gets a prize for finding a good wine that's $150 a bottle. That's kind of easy to do. But it's a real coup when you find something that's really solidly made and actually interesting for under $10. So I actually taste a lot of very cheap wine. Of course, you have to kiss a lot of frogs too, but there is really solid wine under $10 a bottle these days.
Okay, but that wine really divides into two categories, I think, because there's the under $10 wine that is small production and hard to find, and maybe the price is driven by the fact that the winery doesn't have any marketing, or there's some excess wine that's being sold off. There's a tremendous amount of that wine, and we do talk about that a lot on the show. But the wines that we don't talk about are the ones that are being made in the millions of gallons.
Right.
And in fact, in just a little bit, we're going to have the brand ambassador for the Barefoot Wine Company, which was a private company that then was bought in the last decade by Gallo.
Right. Actually, I think Barefoot is a good example of this whole category. Not just because it happens to be the biggest example of the category, but Barefoot has sort of led the way in finding a way to make really solid wine in bulk. Winemakers have techniques these days, and I think maybe some people are horrified by what is done to these wines in manipulating them, but through those manipulations, the wine can come out completely consistent from batch to batch, because it's not necessarily year to year like most vintages. It's a blend of lots of different batches, I like to call it. So you can trust that those wines are decent from year to year. And in fact, I have to say Barefoot consistently wins a lot of medals in our own Sunset Wine Competition.
Is that right?
That is absolutely right.
So some of the wines that Barefoot submits to the competition would be what?
Barefoot Pinot Grigio, all of the Barefoot Bubblies come into our competition. Actually, the Gallows are very supportive of this competition, and we generally get 70 to 80 wines from them entered.
The competition that you're talking about is the Sunset Wine Competition, and you get entries from all over the world.
We
do. And you're very picky about the judges.
Completely picky. I was just actually yesterday going over the list of the judges we have confirmed for this year, which is happening in April, and it's just a phenomenal lineup of professionals. A lot of master sommeliers, masters of wine, and just really experienced tasters. And when they taste, they don't have the wines broken out by price point, since we have, the subject of Barefoot on the table here. They'll taste a Barefoot Pinot Grigio against a, $23 Oregon Pinot Gris, a whole lineup, and they don't know the prices. And so the quality tends to float to the top if it is a solid wine. And I think what their job is sort of to decide, they're so experienced that they could taste the wine and decide what it's trying to be. Is it trying to be a really well-made, simple, refreshing sip for a Sunday afternoon, or is it trying to make you think and be a serious wine? And they usually reward it for what it's trying to be.
Okay, so in other words, if their perception of the wine is, this is a wine that's just for fun, and it tastes fun to drink, which a lot of wine is just fun to drink.
Right.
Then they're going to judge it on its own merits.
Yeah, I think
makes
that
a lot of
they,
sense.
They are able to do that. And so I guess that brings up the issue that, we all drink wine for different reasons. There's a Tuesday night, let's say you have young children and you're racing to help them with school, but you have hot food on the table and you say, hot food, let's open a bottle of wine. You're not necessarily going to have a chance to really appreciate something that has layers of complexity and buries you in the experience. You need something that gets you through Tuesday night with the chaos of typical households.
And so many times I drink wine because I want to enjoy that complexity, and drinking that wine is really an experience. It's not wine as a beverage. But there are times when I want to enjoy wine as a beverage, and I can honestly tell you that an ice cold glass of Barefoot Bubbly or even Cupcakes Bubbly, they're not considered to be premium brands by any stretch of the imagination. They are certainly dominant brands, and if you look at the top 10 and top 20 lists that come out, those wines are consistently on there. And I remember somebody criticizing me for doing the story on Cupcake not too terribly long ago, but I felt compelled to do the story because they're huge and they're bringing in grapes from all over the world, and the complexity of what it takes to make that much wine that is consistently beloved by the population is truly amazing. It's kind of like politics. You may not like the current president, but the majority of the population voted that president in. People like things for different reasons. And if the public is really going to a wine because it resonates with them, no, it's not my job to criticize them.
No, you bring up so many good points with that. Obviously, when you look at the list of the top 20 brands sold in this country, as you said before, that's millions and millions of gallons, not just bottles of wine out there. And people are voting with their pocketbooks. If they're shelling out $6 for that bottle, or $8, $9 for the jug even, or the magnum, they're voting because they have a decent association with that brand. So I think there's some both brilliant marketing in here, but really solid winemaking. You mentioned Cupcake earlier. I organized a seminar last year based on Proseccos and sparkling wine from around the world. And we had Cupcake's winemaker, who is a brilliant woman, on the panel. and she brought the cupcake Prosecco from Italy to put in the lineup, and it was just a delightful wine. Like a lot of Prosecco, it was meant to be a little simpler than traditional champagnes or sparkling wines here, but I could have drunk it for the rest of the afternoon. It was just very delightful.
So you may not drink $80 wines, but you can drink $80 worth of wine.
Well, you know, you go for volume and stuff.
All right, hold that thought, Sarah. We're talking about mainstream wines, the inexpensive wines, but wines that have generated literally hundreds of millions of dollars in sales. There's a reason for it. And so we're giving a little love to those brands today on Grape Encounters Radio with my guest. I can't really call her my guest. She's practically my co-host, Sarah Schneider, the wine editor of the very prestigious Sunset Magazine, one of the greatest lifestyle magazines of all time. We'll be back with Sarah. So stay right there.
Connecting winemakers, wine lovers, wine adventures, and all things wine from around the globe. You are listening to Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson, broadcasting from our wine cellar studio in idyllic Atascadero, centrally located in the Central Coast wine country of California.
Sarah, smile. Won't you smile a while for me?
She's earthy, honest, and sipping each week as a service to you. From Sunset Magazine, it's Sarah Schneider, and this is Sipping with Sarah on Grape Encounters Radio.
With Grape Encounters Radio, and on the line it's Sarah Schneider, and I'm going to be with you in person, Sarah, next week.
I'm looking forward to it.
You will pick out a nice bottle of wine, right?
Absolutely. I already have my eye on a couple here. We need to drink on air.
Oh, awesome. Well, we will definitely do that. But we're talking today about wines that I hope you're not going to serve me, because I want something a little more complex. Oh, that's not fair. But, you know, the wines that are so popular are brands like Barefoot, Sutter Home, Franzia in the box. Number three of the top 20 table wine brands: Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, Yellowtail, Kendall Jackson, Chateau St. Michel, Gallo Family Vineyards, Cupcake, Carlo Rossi, Behringer, Clos du Bois. Some of these names that I'm mentioning, by the way, have some premium wines in the family as well. Kendall Jackson certainly does. Gallo has an entire premium wine division. And so many of the wines that I've just named are coming from the same four or five manufacturers.
It's true. And you make another really good point here about these families or companies. Some of them are large corporations, but the Gallo family is still a family. And they make wonderful wine at upper levels. Their Murray Ranch Pinot Noir. Gina Gallo has her own signature line, and she is the overseeing winemaker on it. And it's really, really well crafted. Same thing with the Trinchero family owning Sutter Home with all that white Zinfandel. They have a Trinchero line that is quite expensive from Napa and just really intricate winemaking. And so I take it that these companies have realized within themselves that we do need wines for different purposes here. And I think it's a good idea to have a box of wine in your fridge, to have a glass of wine when you come home from work, and it's there. It'll stay there for a month. I just wish that people would be bold about putting better and better wine in boxes.
I think they are doing it. And, you know, on that top 20 list of top table wines is Black Box Wine Company. And I have bought, I think, three or four different varietals in the box. And tell you what, it was really a big surprise to me how drinkable that wine was. You know, just for everyday wine drinking, you just want a glass of wine. And I'm not interested in overanalyzing the wine. I just want wine as a beverage. That's pretty good wine.
I have to agree with you. In fact, when you just said that, I had a reaction inside because in this last few months, I've tasted a few Black Box wines. And which is owned, by the way, by Constellation, which is an enormous corporation. But I realized that across their range of wines that go in those boxes, I actually have a better reaction when I think about boxed wine to white wines in boxes than red wines in boxes. And it's not that white wine is easier to make than red. It's not. But I think that there is an easier path to a well-made, bulk, refreshing white wine than to come up with something that's red that has enough to keep my interest. This is just one opinion out of everybody's, but I realize that I gravitate a little more to white in boxes than red.
So can we do this? Can we get a list of big brands that you have awarded, let's say, silver and gold medals to at the Sunset Competition and talk about that next week?
I think
people would find that really fun because, you know, I have judged on multiple occasions wines in the blind and then later came back to see what my panel had voted for and given gold medals to.
Right.
And frankly, I was pretty shocked, you know. Sometimes it is a big wine, so you got to have an open mind. And, you know, just because you have an $80 or $100 Pinot or Cabernet palate doesn't mean that you do have to drink that all the time. And one of the things that I think people forget about is that a lot of these companies, like, you know, Gallo is a great example. If it weren't for Gallo, we wouldn't have the caliber of wine that we have today, even though their specialty is the lower cost wines for the masses. The same technology, the same intelligence that goes into really great wines was really pioneered by companies like that.
It's true, absolutely, and I have the highest respect for the Gallo family and the others on this list, Trincaro, and number seven on this list is Chateau St. Michel from Washington, largest winery in Washington.
Fantastic wine.
Yeah, fantastic winemaking, both white and red. I think they make at least 800 million cases of just Riesling in a year. Probably
wow.
It's up to a million. And it is absolutely solidly well made.
Wow.
So hats off to these companies.
All right, so that's it. We're giving a little love. Actually, we're not through giving love because coming up next, it's the brand ambassador. He was there from day one at the Barefoot Wine Company, and what a fun guy he is. You get to meet him personally. He was really, really in large part responsible for creating one of the most playful, approachable brands of wine. And before Barefoot, you know, we were a lot stuffier when it came to our perception of wine. That's changed a great deal, you know, since those days. And Barefoot was really one of the pioneers, don't you think, Sarah?
I absolutely agree with you there.
All right. Yep. So let's take our hats off to the mainstream wines that you can easily afford. And we're going to take a quick break. And while we're doing that, Sarah, I say we take our shoes off.
I'm for that, too.
For Barefoot Wine, coming up next on Grape Encounters. Hey, thanks, Sarah.
My pleasure. Really good to be back.
And we'll see you next week in person.
Great.
Grape Encounters is 100% estate-grown. We have, however, removed the pretentiousness and added a healthy dose of fun.
Back with Grape Encounters Radio, and I have to tell you that I am just a little bit jealous of my next guest because up until this point, I was the guy that was having the most fun in the wine business, but that was before I found out about Randy Arnold. Randy Arnold is known as the Barefoot guy. He is the brand ambassador for Barefoot Wines. And Randy, welcome to Grape Encounters Radio.
Thank you so much, David. It's great to be here.
How dare you have more fun than me?
Oh, I want everyone to have fun.
Okay, so you're willing to share.
Absolutely.
You have one of the most interesting jobs of anybody. I know I certainly hear about brand ambassadors. Many of the bigger wineries do have them, and, well, I guess even the smaller ones as well. But you are traveling North America, I guess, constantly. And I was able to look at a few pictures of you in your role as brand ambassador, and you're having way too much fun.
Well, thank you. It's great to share that with consumers and to bring them into the wine category.
So you've been with the company a really long time.
Almost 25 years, actually, so it's pretty exciting.
You know, I guess I didn't really realize that Barefoot had been around that long. It is, I guess, the best-selling brand in terms of volume.
Yes, it is.
But what were the early years like? Because I'm not sure that I could put my finger on when we started seeing Barefoot absolutely every place, but there must have been a threshold where you reached that point. Talk a little bit about the background of the company and when it really mushroomed.
In 1986. That's when we got started, and we were very small. We only sold at that point in Northern California. And I started working for them in 1990, and we started to expand distribution. We moved product to Southern California as well. So I had the entire state, and then we moved throughout the West. And then about 1997, we started to expand nationwide. And a lot of my work was creating our first distributors and introducing Barefoot to those states.
So what do you think the secret of Barefoot's success is? Because, you know, there are obviously thousands of wine labels out there. What makes a company like Barefoot stand out and take off the way the company did?
Yeah, you know, we were purchased by the Gallo family in 2005, and they really embraced our unique culture and invested greatly in Barefoot. One of the things that I started many years ago and our founders did as well was to donate to nonprofits. So that's how we really got the brand established. So we really didn't advertise for many, many years. It was all through donations for nonprofits and helping raise money for community causes, which were very close to our hearts as well.
So let me understand that. So what's happening here is that you donate wine to different nonprofits, and that's how people became familiar with the wine, a little departure from the tasting room concept.
Yeah, you know, it was really a natural thing for us to want to be involved in the community, and it really evolved over the years as well. And I've now donated Barefoot to over 200 nonprofits in my 25 years.
Wow.
So I know that a lot of wineries will choose a cause that they support, and we have hundreds of causes and all over the world now, so it's pretty exciting.
Barefoot came along at a time when I think the wine industry was a whole lot stuffier than it is right now. And that had to be something of a challenge, because now if you want to get a little crazy in the wine business, it's perfectly okay. And many of the brands have gotten very campy. And, of course, a lot of brands catering to the millennials and getting very creative in both the wines that they're producing and the way they market those wines. But I think it had to be a different story when you first started. Was there any resistance that you were aware of, or did it just happen naturally?
Well, a wine with a foot on it is definitely not what a lot of people thought was an appropriate label 25 years ago. So I really felt very much like a wine outsider, and I was very comfortable in that role as well. So,
can you tell me a little bit about some of the resistance maybe that you got? Did people take the brand seriously, or did you sometimes get scoffed at?
You know, it is kind of interesting that sometimes I felt, you know, being the outsider role, it's a role that I think suited me very well. And, you know, I wanted to create new wine consumers, and a lot of the resistance was that we had to maintain exclusivity in wine. And my attitude was the first bottle of wine that someone buys is never $100. Maybe the 100th bottle they buy is $100, but that never happens. So I wanted to get people into the category enjoying wines. And it's interesting that a lot of people thought that that was not a good approach to take.
Yeah, darn it, you're going to sell this wine for $100 whether you like it or not, Randy.
Well, you know, we now have 32 different wines and bubblies, so
holy
we make
smoke.
Something for everybody. And that has really helped to bring new consumers into the wine category. You know, we got to get them in the wine category, and then they may stay where they are, or they may move up to more expensive wines as well. But, you know, I used to say that if people don't have a good experience at the entry-level price point, we've lost them to beer forever.
So basically, you're providing a public service to the rest of the wine industry, because you're welcoming new wine drinkers with open arms, and then if they want to graduate up to those $100 bottles, then just send them on their merry way.
You know, it's really interesting that I have friends that work in tasting rooms, and many of them have told me that a lot of people come in and they'll say that Barefoot was the first wine that they ever tried, and thank you so much. So that's really fantastic. And today, a large percentage of our revenue comes from new consumers to the category of wine. And that was my dream. And this is a dream that has come true in a very big and spectacular way. So
we're talking to Randy Arnold. He is known as the Barefoot Guy. He's the brand ambassador for Barefoot Wines. This is a behemoth wine company for sure. What's the production, Randy, at this point?
You know, we don't really talk about our numbers. I can't say that we are the most popular wines sold in America.
You know the numbers, though, right?
Yes.
You're just not going to tell.
It's not something that we really talk about.
Okay, but it's big, suffice to say.
Yeah, we're found in every state and every market and doing very well and continuing to grow, which is very exciting as well.
So the biggest segment of your market, I'm guessing, comes from the youngest wine drinkers, correct?
You know, I like to say that our customer is 21 to 121. All kinds of people. It's a wide range of consumers.
But young at heart for sure.
Yeah, I would say absolutely. And a lot of wine consumers are entering the wine category. You know, I think that there's 10,000 people turn 21 every day in America. So there's 10,000 new consumers that we have available to our industry every single day. So that's really exciting.
Now, do you get that birthday list and send them a bottle of wine?
No, sorry, we can't.
You can't do that?
Darn it.
That was an I would if I could.
Right.
Very good. Okay, so let's talk about Randy Arnold's schedule for a little bit here. Tell me some of the more interesting places that you get to go, and what do you do when you get there?
You know, my top priority is working with our new winery representatives. We call everybody a barefooter. So when we hire a new person, my top priority is to get to spend time with them. And we talk about their local community, and I try to bring them up to date on our history and background of Barefoot, so they'll have that. And then we work in the accounts, and we look for opportunities, and, you know, it's really interesting. I say there's so many differences and difference in culture and food as you travel around the United States that it's really the differences that make this a really fantastic country to travel, as much as I get to do. So
now, the new barefooters, do you actually inspect their feet before they're able to work for the company?
No, I don't.
You don't? You don't do that?
Every foot is good. If it'll crush a grape, you know, the label is the wine-stained footprint. So that's it's an homage to the original way of crushing grapes. So every foot is the same. And works very well.
But you embrace the foot, so I'm guessing that there have to be some ways that the foot comes into play in the everyday activities of barefoot. Like, for instance, can I go to the office if I work there barefoot, or do I have to wear shoes?
Oh, I'm certain you could be barefoot, absolutely.
Absolutely?
Yes.
And tell me how, if at all, things changed when Gallo took over the company. Were they vigilant in trying to protect the brand? Because you certainly had your own niche that at that time nobody else had. How did that go down?
Well, it's, I think, one of the most successful partnerships in the wine industry ever. So the Gallo family really embraced our culture, and they invested greatly in our culture and in all of our donations to nonprofits. They were able to greatly increase that. We increased the number of reps, barefooters that we have in the marketplace. We actually now have barefooters in Canada, the UK, Poland, and Colombia. They're all having a fantastic time, and they're donating to local nonprofits and really enjoying their work. So it's very gratifying to see that.
And I think Gallo is a company that really does, when they purchase a brand, try to keep the culture in place. At least that's been my impression of how they do their business.
Yeah, you know, they recognize the uniqueness of Barefoot and our culture, and they made sure that we had our great winemaker, Jennifer Wall, with us as well. So she joined the team as well, which was great to have her input as well.
So you have 32 different wines, so I'm guessing them grapes are coming from all over the world at this point.
You know, mostly we're California. The largest majority of wines are all California, and our largest single vineyard source is the Cal Ranch, which the Gallos own in the Sierra foothills, and it's on the Merced River, and it's about a 3,000-acre vineyard on the Merced. And so that is a spectacular location for a lot of our grapes. But we also purchase from hundreds of grape-growing families up and down the Central Valley, the Delta region, a lot in Lodi, and then the Sierra foothills as well.
If I want to have barefoot fun, give me a couple of ways that I can do it.
Well, you know, one of our platforms is beach cleanup, and we'll do over 100 beach cleanups, making beaches barefoot friendly. And this is really a spectacular time when a group of people get together and clean up a beach, and then afterward we have food and wine and barefoot bubbly for them and entertainment. We celebrate another beach made barefoot friendly. And that's one of the greatest days at my work, absolutely.
So you choose different beaches every year, is that how that works?
Yes. Yeah, we work with Surf Rider Foundation in North America and also Alliance of the Great Lakes and then other nonprofits. And we're also doing beach cleanups in the UK, and they get a tremendous response when 200 to 300 people are showing up for one of these events. And we're also able to connect with our retailers. A lot of the retailers will send teams of people as well. So it's just a wonderful community way of connecting and doing good.
Now, I know that there are certain people that are listening right now that have tuned in and said, wait a second, you know, we like the stuffier brands. And that's okay. And I am as well. But I really do feel that the industry does owe a debt of gratitude to Barefoot because you have injected a whole lot of fun into the business and really, I think, probably more than anybody else started that trend. Is it exciting for you to look back now and think about the trails that you were blazing way back when and see where things have come?
It's incredible. It's a great life to see the success of Barefoot and to see all the organizations that we're able to support and the impact we're able to have in the world.
He's the Barefoot guy, Randy Arnold. Been doing it for a long, long time, a quarter of a century, as a matter of fact. The brand ambassador for one of the best known brands on planet Earth. And they really triggered the movement to have a little more fun with your wine and, you know, just to say goodbye to the stuffiness because life is too darn short. Randy, I really appreciate you being on.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Barefoot.
You're having a grape encounter with David Wilson. What a way to spend the day.
We like to talk about wine.
If you have a thirst for wine knowledge, be it trivia or the latest trends, there's a website that's overflowing with content that we've created just for you. It's grapeencounters.com, where you'll find literally hundreds upon hundreds of stories and interviews covering almost every topic imaginable. From the world's most colorful and renowned winemakers to unforgettable wine adventures, there's something for every wine lover at grapeencounters.com. Go ahead, log on, uncork, pour, swirl, and sip.
Choosing a gift bottle of wine for a wine lover can be tricky, but choosing a wine accessory that the wine enthusiast in your life will really love is a snap when you log on to grapeencounters.com. At grapeencounters.com, you'll find our top 10 gift-giving picks for wine lovers, and everyone is sure to be a hit. From exotic openers to wine toolkits and even breathalyzers to ensure safety, we've got plenty of inspiration for you. If you're looking for a wine-related gift for someone special, even yourself, get inspired at grapeencounters.com.
This is David Wilson, and I want you to sail with me from Rome to Barcelona on one of the most luxurious cruise ships in the world, the completely reimagined Regent Seven Seas Mariner. Every year, I take listeners on a luxury voyage sure to create unforgettable memories. And next May, from the 10th to the 17th, our itinerary will include some of my favorite places on the planet. And I'll be there to make sure that your travel experience is purely amazing. Imagine visiting incomparable Rome, Florence, Portofino, Provence, and breathtaking Barcelona. The ports will be spectacular, and your elegant suite with a private patio will astound you. Book now and get 2-for-1 fares, free round-trip air, $200 shipboard credit, plus you pay nothing extra for wine, cocktails, shore excursions, even tips are included. For more information, click the link at grapeencounters.com. I've got a luxury cabin with your name on it. Click on the link now at grapeencounters.com.
Grape Encounters presents What We Heard Through the Grapevine.
today's top news, trends, and stories. Here's where we've encountered. This is Grape Encounters News.
I'm just secondhand news. I'm just secondhand news. Yeah.
It is time for the Grape Encounters News, and we're going to dive into it now with a little help from our friend Larry Gifford, the chief wine news correspondent for Grape Encounters Radio. Hey, Larry.
You know, one of the wines that people are most interested in that people are curious about is that Two Buck Chuck over at Trader Joe's, the Charles Shaw.
Yep.
Everybody drinks it, or not everybody, but a lot of people drink it, and they seem to always have plenty in stock.
You'll see people walking out the door with 4 and 5 cases of that.
Yeah. How does it come so cheap?
I have a feeling you're going to tell us.
I am going to tell you.
You know, by the way, it's an interesting thing that people probably don't realize. Just the cost of the bottle, the label, and getting the wine into the bottle and corking it, for most winemakers, is around the price of a bottle of Charles Shaw wine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a question that people ask a lot. How do they do it?
And our friends at Business Insider went on the mission to find out. And here's what they found out, David. Bronco Vineyards is the company that makes it. They take advantage of really cheap real estate in the overly hot San Joaquin Valley. The company ferments the wine with oak chips instead of oak barrels.
By the way, for those who don't know where the San Joaquin Valley is, it's in the heart of California, but more inland than the other wine regions that you're more familiar with.
The company uses the cheapest form of natural cork available, and it's like a mold of cork pieces glued together with what they call a real cork veneer.
That sounds unnatural. Okay.
They make wine in super huge quantities. So the Bronco wines make about 90 million gallons a year.
That's almost enough to fill your gigantic swimming pool, Larry.
Almost. We're getting close there.
90 million gallons of wine.
Can you imagine?
I can't even imagine how many tons of grapes it takes to do that.
It's all machine harvested, too. They don't do it by hand, which saves them the manual labor cost. And then the shipping costs are reduced with lighter bottles, which you talked about, and cheaper cartons.
And that's it.
That's it. So
that's the secret. And I do want to say this about Two Buck Chuck. It's like, I don't personally drink it, but I'm also never going to badmouth it because a lot of people love it. And I've always said this, that if you enjoy inexpensive wine and you're not longing for something even better, then drink what you like and don't let the price affect your decision. If it's inexpensive and it's yummy to you, then by all means, enjoy.
I'll drink to that. The state of Pennsylvania conducted a several months long undercover operation and a 20-hour raid on a couple's home and found 2,400 bottles of fine wine bought legally, but they seized the entire collection, David.
What were they doing in my house?
Turns out this man had gained access to the inventories in California that were off limits to everyday wine buyers. And so he let friends and colleagues join in purchasing wines from these suppliers, but he didn't charge them extra for it, just a conduit. And someone complained that he was selling wine in Pennsylvania without a liquor license.
The state
investigated. They charged him as an unlicensed dealer, seized all his wines, and now not only do they have his wine, they're going to destroy it, $160,000 worth.
I'm so unclear on this story. Who made the wine? Do you know?
Well, it's from all over. He bought it off the internet.
Oh, so you're saying that he bought all of this wine from different resources and then he was reselling it.
He was not reselling his wine. He was buying wines from fancy places.
Yeah.
And as he was making his orders, people would say, hey, can you give me a bottle of that? Can you give me a bottle of that? So he would put their orders in bulk with his.
Uh-huh.
And the wines we delivered to him, and he'd deliver them to the people.
But did he have a license to resell the wine?
No.
He didn't.
No.
Why are they destroying it?
Because it's Pennsylvania. They got a lot of backwards laws in Pennsylvania as it comes to alcohol.
So just because it's Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a law that's held over from, you know, Prohibition.
Well, it just seems to me that Pennsylvania is the seat of freedom here in this country, and we should be free to be able to buy those wines from him dirt cheap.
Exactly.
Can we go to the event, the wine destruction event? And wouldn't that be – well, it wouldn't be –
That would be sad.
It would be painful. Huh?
It would be painful
to
watch.
Are they going to just like
– they should put it live on the internet, though.
Are they going to empty the bottles one by one?
Well, he's fighting it in court, and he's saying it's unconstitutional, and he wants all his wine back.
All right. Okay. What else you got?
Do you like pie, David?
You mean the mathematical formula?
No. The key lime pie or the apple pie or the pumpkin, apple crumble, peach pie.
I love key lime pie.
You love key lime pie.
My favorite is coconut cream pie.
Coconut cream pie. Okay. So MMN.com has a little handy pie chart out about what wines go with pies.
A pie chart. Very funny. Really? All right.
Yeah. It's with key lime pie, they're saying you should serve a Sauve Blanc.
Okay.
A Riesling for your apple pie.
Makes sense.
Chardonnay for pumpkin pie.
Weird.
Champagne for apple crumble.
Champagne for apple crumble. Okay.
Yeah. Cherry pie is a Syrah.
That makes sense.
Blueberry pie.
Pinot Noir.
Petite Syrah.
Seriously?
Well, I suppose
all
you
right,
could.
All right, it starts with a P.
Chocolate cream pie is Merlot.
All right. And if somebody wants to check that information out, is there a website or something?
MNN.com.
MNN?
Yep.
.com.
Yep.
Okay. So the word men misspelled. All right. We just have a minute or two more.
French scientists have found that vigorously shaking a bottle of champagne can actually decrease the pressure that builds up inside the bottle. The key, it seems, is waiting for the right amount of time before opening the bottle.
All right. Who commissioned this study?
It was the University of Reims. And they found that, you know, although the pressure initially drops when the champagne is shaken, huge numbers of bubbles form in the neck of the bottle. And if you wait 3.5 minutes, it will be less pressure when the cork comes out.
All right. This is totally counterintuitive.
It is.
So
shake it vigorously for 20 seconds and then let it sit for 3.5 minutes.
I don't even know why we're doing this story. This is a ridiculous story. And if somebody paid money to commission this study, you know, the joke's on you.
Well, the
you
same
should just
group.
Learn how to open a bottle of champagne.
How do you open a bottle of champagne without
a cloth around it, and then you slowly twist it. And as you're twisting, you almost, you know, as you start to feel it give a little bit, you're actually pushing down, not up. And it's a twisting back and forth motion. Rotate the bottle. Don't rotate the cork. At least that's how I do it. And it just sounds like a little poof.
Oh.
And anyway, don't let your mind go there.
Okay.
All right. Anything else?
Well, that same group discovered that cooling champagne to 39 degrees slows the cork speed by 25% when it leaves the bottle.
Okay.
So
there you go. These are people with too much time on their hands.
And too much money.
Okay. All right.
That's the news as we see it.
That's it? Man, talk about a slow news week, Larry. We'll talk to you next week.
You never know what part of the country or the world the Grape Encounters microphones will take you to. Don't miss a single experience. Your Grape Encounter isn't over. We're just taking a breather until next week's edition.